We're doing the thing again, Mom.
Here we are once again.
We're doing it. And we have a new audio setup. So it's kind of going to be a little bit different, but yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. We got to figure it out for sure.
Yeah. We were like, damn, we have 21 listeners. It's probably time to up our microphone game.
Thanks to all 21 of you.
Right. Hey, you know, we have a foot in the door because people who we don't know are listening, which is pretty cool.
So cool.
I said, hair flip. I have a podcast.
Yes, you did. That was a thing. That was a thing that you said.
I still do. I still do.
Currently, I do indeed have a podcast that requires a hair flip.
And if you've been listening since the beginning, you know that we record at night. And there was one episode that we recorded in the morning. This is episode 2 that we've recorded in the morning.
Yeah, except for it's like noon or something.
It's like 11:30. It's still before noon.
That's true. It's before noon.
And we were planning on doing it at like 10. And then life just happened this morning. Always. Life is always happening. But it like really happened this morning because I was like, hello. Hello. Where are you, parents? Where are you, family? Hello. And then I was like, oh, we're at Sam's Club. I'm like, oh, big flex. We're at Sam's Club.
Yeah, super fancy.
Big flex.
Big flex.
Also, we're sitting so far apart from each other now. It kind of feels depressing, but I can still look over and see your beautiful face. So that makes me happy.
Aw, it is kind of sad because we were sharing one mic. And so we were kind of spitting on each other most of the time.
Yeah, really spitting on each other. I was like, damn, that was a loogie in my eye.
Wowzers. That seems uncool of me.
What are you doing with your hands? You better not have any deodorant in them.
I got nothing. I'm just wringing them.
Okay. Yeah. One episode, we had to like pause it. I was like, what the fuck are you doing, Mom? Like halfway through, which I think we took out most of the clicking sounds. But my mom had a mini deodorant in her hands and like inside of her hoodie pocket, you know, one giant pocket. And it was just popping on and off the lid of a mini deodorant. I was like, what is that sound? I was like, this doesn't feel normal.
Yeah. Well, I have a hard time sitting still. So if I'm sitting still, I've got to be doing something. And clicking the mini deodorant in my pocket was me doing something.
All right. What you're going to do is you're going to go to... Our Instagram is at That's Disturbing Podcast, which you should, you know, go give a follow to, go like posts, go share posts.
Yeah.
Do the things.
Look at our pictures.
That you do on Instagram.
On Instagram. On the gram.
Do the things you do on the gram.
Ooh, now I want graham crackers.
Ooh. You know, do the things you do on Instagram. Give us a follow. Maybe give us a like. Look at some of the pictures. You could see people's faces. Or creepy dolls' faces, or scary locations in Colorado's faces.
Or that note that Sid Vicious wrote. Two notes, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, just one note and then his autopsy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Or somebody's autopsy. Was it his or hers?
It was his autopsy. Words.
Yes.
Which was performed by Dr. Michael Bodden, which I thought was pretty cool. You don't know who that is.
I have no idea. I just looked at her famous, so dumbfounded.
He's a famous... doctor who performs autopsies, and like he's done a ton of cases, like a ton of really well-known cases.
So maybe we have to deep dive into him one day.
Well, I don't know if he'd be a good one, but I mean, a lot of the ones that we're going to cover are probably the autopsies that he's done.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
Probably.
And also, you can go to our Gmail and send us an email. I guess you wouldn't go to like our Gmail. I'm not giving you the password. But our Gmail, if you would like to send us a request from there instead of from the website, which I just spent so much time developing, but whatever floats your fancy.
It's a beautiful website. It's very easily navigatable, and it's so cool that you did it yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the case request form is on the website.
It is on the website. But our email, which it will be directed to our email, is thatsdisturbingpodcast@gmail.com.
Yay.
All right. Enough of that. Because, wow, that was really hard to spit everything out. Are you ready to hear my disturbing fact?
Oh, I'm so excited.
Okay. Let's do this. Today, for our disturbing fact, we're going to be talking about safety coffins.
What?
Have you ever heard of a safety coffin?
No.
Legitimately, you've never heard of a safety coffin?
No.
Or you're just giving me a wow reaction?
No, why do you need a safety coffin? In case you're not actually dead?
ding, ding, ding.
Well, sorry, I was just thinking like how refrigerators can open from the inside so little kids don't get locked in them, or trunks and that, because they didn't used to. Like, refrigerators used to be death traps. Trunks used to be death traps.
Right. They have the little yellow, bright yellow safety thing inside of trunks now in case you get locked in, then you can pull it and get let out.
Right. And apparently they have that for coffins.
So the security coffin, it was designed by Dr.
Security coffin or safety coffin?
Both.
Oh, AKA?
AKA. Yeah, I mean, I think it's referred to as either the security. So, you know, security in case you're dead or not dead inside of your coffin. Was designed by Dr. Gottfried Tauberger. The year was 1829. 1829, definitely not 1929. I'm sorry, apparently my brain is doing like backflips right now because it ain't moving, it ain't doing front flips. So it was designed in a way that if somebody was buried alive inside of it, they could easily get themselves, you know, help. That it was designed in such a way that there was a bell in a certain position. That if the bell got rang, like, security guards around these cemeteries would know for a fact that it wasn't, like, the wind hitting the bells or birds or whatever, you know? That it wasn't any external force.
Mm-hmm.
It was an internal force hitting the bell.
I think I actually have heard of the bell thing where they, like, put a bell around someone's wrist. And then that way, if they're not dead and they do the bell, then it rings on the outside. I mean, obviously outside of the coffin.
Right. The corpse, or not, would have strings attached to its hands, head, and feet. And then the bell would be housed above the ground. But in, like I said, like the improvement in the design was so that the wind wouldn't trigger the bell, or birds landing wouldn't trigger a bell. Like it would be if somebody was like, viciously yanking the strings.
Like, get me out of this freaking coffin because yes. I'm not actually dead.
But it also prevented, like, a later upgrade to the design was that it prevented rainwater from running down the tube. So people also couldn't, like, drown in there, which also prevented insects from entering.
Ew.
Yeah. Just in case, you know.
In case they are dead or not dead. Either way, I guess.
Yeah, right. So it happens so often that obviously it was developed in the 1800s or the design like came to fruition in the 1800s. So one patient, her name was Alice Blunden. A doctor mistakenly thought that she was dead after she drank some sedatives. And so she was buried alive.
Fuck. She ended up cold herself and she wasn't really dead.
Yeah, basically.
Ooh, I shouldn't say that.
Aw, poor R.I.P. R.I.P. Anna Nicole Smith.
Right.
So it didn't just happen once to her. It happened twice to her.
Oh, shit.
So she...
Okay, I refer back to my previous statement then.
So they exhumed her the first time and then they found her... not dead. They found her like near death, but she wasn't totally dead. But then it happened
she was kinda dead.
Second time. And then they reburied her. And then they found her struggling in the casket, but she was still alive. And then she eventually died in the casket.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
That sucks. Were there like claw marks and stuff inside the casket?
It didn't say if there were claw marks or anything, but that's all of these cases are why they developed the safety coffin.
No kidding.
Isn't that whack?
Yeah, that's... I want to be cremated. So hopefully like, I am dead so I'm not actually burned alive.
Like, shouldn't you check for a heartbeat?
Yeah. Yeah, you would think. If
you're planning on burying somebody.
Maybe get
some vital signs on them.
Yeah, check.
Because I feel like even if you were in a stupor... Like, if you were just in a stupor from sedatives, right? Or whatever it may be.
If you're passed out.
You'd still have a damn heartbeat.
And
like your
breathing.
Chest would be moving a little bit.
Right.
Like, would they think that there was, like, an insect infestation in her chest causing all those things?
I don't know. That's fucked
gross.
Up, though. I wouldn't trust that doctor.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I don't know if he went on to continue to work or what.
Oh, I'm sure he probably did.
I'm sure. All
That's
right, mama.
Not cool.
What do you have for me today?
And can I just say one more thing? I'm like picturing a little yellow latch on the inside of the coffin.
I know, like a trunk. A little plastic safety latch.
Right. But if you're buried, you're fucked anyway.
Yeah.
Because how do you get out from 6 feet? Plus they put like concrete and stuff. Okay, I'll stop.
Well, I don't think they put concrete then because they didn't have concrete back then. They had like cobblestones.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or whatever else.
I'm talking about now.
Oh, well, now. Fuck, I think now they probably...
Make sure you're actually dead?
If you're going to be buried in a casket, there are probably steps. Whereas if you're buried alive, you're kind of fucked. Like if somebody tries to just bury you.
Although I heard the other day on the radio that there was this lady in a nursing home that they thought that she was dead. So they took her out of the nursing home, body bag, the whole nine, took her to the morgue, got her to the morgue, and she wasn't dead.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I've heard of that more than once.
I guess it's easy to mistake people for being dead when they're not, is the moral of the story. Right. I don't know what the moral of the story is. I really don't.
Yeah, I feel like there's not one. Just hope for the best if you're actually not dead that somebody saves you, I guess.
Right. Be like, you might say, like, when you're in the body bag, like, hey, I'm still here. I'm still alive.
Can someone unzip this, please?
Right.
Maybe it has an inside zipper like a coat, how they have two zippers, one on the inside.
I think just saying like, hello.
A safety
it's
body
dark
bag.
In here.
And it's plastic and I can't breathe.
I'm sure there's air holes for cases like that.
Okay.
Maybe not. I don't know. I feel like that would start decomposition a lot sooner than you'd want if they were inside of a plastic body bag.
Right. Okay, we'll get off that because I was like going down a whole thing where I was like, it's like those vegetable containers that Rubbermaid makes. What? That like, it's like a Rubbermaid container, but it has like ventilation so the vegetables don't get icky.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. We have some of those.
I know. That's why I know that they exist.
That's why I know about them.
Right. Okay, should we stop now?
Probably. Probably. Okay. Tell me what you got for me today.
The case I'm covering today is called, it's about Francis Herman, aka the Priestly Butcher.
Ooh.
So this is a throwback. We're going to the 1800s.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
My disturbing fact was in the 1800s.
Right? But what
well,
a time.
I mean, I'm sure it still happened before then, but it was invented.
It was. So, shall we jump in?
We shall. Let's do this thing, chicken wing.
Alrighty. So the guy's name was, he was a reverend. So it's Reverend Francis Herman, and he was born in England in 1856, and he became an American pastor, murderer, and was suspected of being a serial killer. So he's just an all-around, well-rounded, well-traveled guy.
Yeah, charming, worldly man.
Right? You know, if you're looking for your pastor / serial killer.
I feel like they exist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, clearly they do.
Clearly. Okay. So what I'm wondering is why you're godly. Why are you taking lives?
Well, we'll get there. Maybe. Okay. I mean, we'll see if we get there or not. So not much is known about his early life because, you know, it's the 1800s and he wasn't doing great things before he all of a sudden became a notable human where they were then able to gather more information. So in the beginning, his early years, his parents were either Norwegian or Danish immigrants, depending on the source.
Immigrants into?
Into England, because okay. That's where he was born in
right,
England.
Right, right, right. You said that. I just didn't know if you meant into America.
No, they were from Norway or
Danish. Or from cheese.
Oh, my gosh.
See, Danish is Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
And Dutch people are from the Netherlands, I think.
Yes, that's correct.
So they were either from the Netherlands or from...
Norway. Right.
Or from Norwegian.
Or from Norwegian. So,
damn, we need to get more worldly over here. No, I'm like, fuck.
No, she kidding.
No, she kidding.
So, again, not enough, not a ton of information is known about his early life, except for the fact that he was a highly educated man. And the story begins that he had a wife named Emmeline Smith while he was living in England, who died under mysterious circumstances in 1889. And boop, That's it. I got nothing else. There's no more information about her or her death or anything. Because again, he's
early days.
He's not a notable.
And we don't know.
Not a notable.
I like that
person.
Name, Emmeline.
It's a great name.
It's a pretty name.
It is a good name.
Why isn't that brought back around?
I don't know. Maybe it will be.
I hope so. I like it.
It is a nice name. Francis moved to the United States in 1891, and he first settled in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he married a woman named Bertha Wagner. Bertha and Francis had a child together, and Bertha was said to be mentally unstable and was to be moved into a mental institution, into an asylum is what they were known as back in those days.
Right.
And just a few hours before she was set to move into the asylum, words, Gail, words.
Her heart, it's fine.
So bad. She and her and the infant child suddenly died under, again, mysterious circumstances. Their deaths were never investigated.
So did it say why she was unstable at all?
It just said that she was known to have mental condition. She was mentally unstable. So whether she was...
So this is back in the day where they were like, wow, you have your period and it's hysteria.
Right.
Without just being like, wow, people have emotions.
Or postpartum, maybe.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah, it's sad. So
this guy sounds like a tool.
Yeah. Yeah. AKA the Priestly Butcher.
Yeah, he sounds like a fucking tool.
Right. So this is wife number two.
Yeah.
Right. But again, like I said, he's come from England. He's moved to the United States. So there's not like a trail. Like, it's not like, oh, my God, this is wife number two. Like, people don't know that this is wife number two. Right.
Right.
And also
they
a child.
Have no idea.
Child. Also a child.
Yes.
So the mom and the child both died under mysterious circumstances.
So if we're keeping tallies, this is number three.
Right.
This is three people.
Right. And this is right before they're getting ready to take her to the asylum.
Suspicious.
Yeah, super.
And you are sounding like not a very kind person.
No. Not very pastorally.
No, definitely. Although, you know... Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, don't go there.
I won't go there. I know some very kind pastors, though.
Me too.
I don't think that they have any people in their basement.
Oh, shoot. So a year later, he married a woman named Miss Lowen, who was from Iowa. And they were married in Minneapolis shortly after, again, the first wife and child mysteriously die. Yeah, second wife.
Bertha and the baby die.
So after their marriage, they moved to Superior, Wisconsin. And there, Francis became pastor of the first Norwegian-Danish Methodist Episcopal Church. So he's
bringing
it back home.
That's a name.
Right?
Where's the English in there?
There isn't. But Episcopalian, that's English. Or Protestant.
Yeah, Protestant.
Yeah, well, both, right?
I don't know. Are they the same thing or are they not?
No, they're not the same thing. Not the same thing.
I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know.
We're not good at this.
My religious studies are not...
No, not there.
Deep.
Not there. Okay.
I don't think I've ever actually taken a religious studies course.
No.
I just have heard names.
Right. But did you catch that in the beginning that it was the first Norwegian-Danish?
Yeah.
And his parents were either Norwegian or Danish.
So he's just... So was it one or the other? Or was it both?
I don't know.
No, I'm not talking about his parents. The church.
The church. It was the first Norwegian-Danish Methodist Episcopal Church. It's a really long name.
So maybe it came from both parents. Maybe.
Well, he didn't name the church.
Was from one country and the other parent was from another. Oh, he didn't name it.
No, he just became the pastor, but maybe he was drawn to it.
The first pastor or
no.
Is the church called the first?
He became the pastor of the first. The name of the church is
the first.
The name of the church is First Norwegian Danish Methodist Episcopal Church.
See, I'm wondering if it wasn't called the first. And like, they just called it the first when they were doing research about him. They're like, oh, this was the first one of this kind.
No, the church is actually, well, as far as I can tell from my research, I'm going to go with that it was like First Bank. Yeah, or like First Savings or First National something. I don't know how things have the word first in them.
Yeah.
Okay, this first. Is too much. Too much firsting.
We're firsting for life. Sorry, I just had so many questions in my head.
Clearly.
I was like, I'm so confused.
And now I want a Danish.
A cheese one?
Yeah.
See, I like cheese blintzes better.
I love cheese Danishes.
I guess it depends if I'm in the mood for something fluffy or something more dense.
Okay. Shall we? Shall we get back to the story?
I guess you could argue, though, that he would have eaten either, given right. both of his heritage.
Right.
Or lack thereof. I don't know. Sorry.
Jeez.
We're having too much fun with this.
No kidding. So by all accounts, he was well respected in Scandinavian social circles and was also a central figure in the ministers association. The couple lived in Superior, Wisconsin until the fall of 1893 and then relocated to Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay,
so we're following along, right?
Yes.
So soon after they moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, they had a baby.
And then they became Mormon.
No. I mean, it's not a leap, but that's not what happened. So then, mysteriously, the mother and child died.
Of course they did. This seems like a pattern.
It does seem like a pattern, does it not?
Except for Emmeline didn't have a baby.
No.
Emmeline.
Unless she did and it would just, there was no record of it. Because there was so nothing on Emmeline. And gotcha. It was just like, he was married to her and she died.
Aw.
So, and mysteriously.
Mysterious circumstances.
Right. Seems like he's cultivating a craft.
Seems like he is the... Not Black Widow, but like Black Widow, but for men. I don't know. Is Black Widow gender inclusive? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. I feel like, given the times, probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
Right. So if we're counting, we're up to three wives and two children, which seems like pretty unbelievable odds that five people in your life are going to die under mysterious circumstances, and I'm air quoting here.
Yeah, I would say you did it.
I'm like, me personally? No.
I'm looking her dead in the eye.
You did it. No, this is the 1800s. Couldn't have been possible.
Unless it is.
Yeah.
You have something you need to tell us all today?
No.
You're not a vampire?
I am not.
A 200-year-old vampire?
No, God, I can't even stay up past 9:30.
You're not going hunting?
No. Nope, not even a little bit.
Not going to dry up like Niklaus from The Vampire Diaries?
Well, I feel like it today. I'm so dry. My skin is dry. I'm thirsty. So, you know.
Colorado.
So now let's talk about some more murders that he's suspected of women that he's not married to.
Okay.
So apparently he's going to change his little pattern here.
So... he's diddling on the side, murdering everybody around him.
Pretty much.
Oh, my God, this guy.
Right. And he's a reverend.
Wow.
Back to the he's a reverend thing. So the first one that, and again, this is what we know. And because they started paying more attention to this guy, then there's more details about the next little round of events. Because the first ones were like, oh, that's a fluke. Oh, that's a fluke. And the first one in England, I'm sure nobody even knew about until they started investigating the later situation, right? So then the next ones, there's like more information.
Okay.
So.
Gotcha.
All right.
So there's limited in the beginning.
Yeah. Because limited again, info. It's just a fluke. It's like, well, that's poor dude. Like, poor Reverend Herman. He has such bad luck. What are the chances?
What are the odds of his luck just... being so poor that everyone around him winds up dead.
Right.
I don't know, maybe take a look at him.
No kidding. And never mind. I don't even want to think about it. Because how are you a reverend or how are you any kind of a person and you're killing your babies?
You're not.
Yeah.
You're not any kind of a person if you're killing your babies.
You're not. It's terrible. Because, I mean, I can... understand why sometimes people kill their spouses.
Wow. I was like, I'm looking at her like, is she really going here? Are you really going there?
But your little baby? That's no. no, no, no,
no, no, no, no,
no.
So sad.
No. So anyway, the first victim that is not a wife is, her name is Henrietta Claussen. She was a Swedish native and she came to the United States in 1887. She had no relatives in the United States and she settled in with a family by the name of Johnson in Omaha, Nebraska. And due to illness, again, it's so hard to find stuff when it's the 1800s, right? I'm not sure if it was her illness or an illness within the family that she left, and she went to live in Salt Lake City with a woman named Tilly Anderson. And Tilly later left Salt Lake City to return to Omaha, but Henrietta decided that she really liked Salt Lake City, so she stayed in Salt Lake City. She did keep in contact with her friends in Omaha through letters, though. So people, like, she's got friends, she's making connections, she's not, again.
But was it her?
Was what her?
Her keeping in contact with letters.
Yeah.
She was her.
Yeah, she was keeping in contact with her friends because, again, she's from Sweden. She doesn't have any relatives here, so she's connecting with the people that she's meeting here, right?
Right.
So, and it was a time, you know, people are immigrating to the United States and they're,
you know. I was just thinking maybe it wasn't her sending the letters.
No.
It was somebody else. No.
Well, she's sending the letters. We're just going to go with that.
She was alive.
She was alive. So she kept in contact with her friends through letters. And soon after the Reverend Francis Herman arrived in, sorry, the Francis Herman. That was not.
The Francis Herman.
So soon after Reverend Herman arrived in Salt Lake City, her letters to her friends in Omaha alluded to a great friend, a great friendship that she had developed with the Reverend.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in September of 1895, the Reverend was attending a church conference somewhere on the East Coast, and Henrietta was hired to look after his apartments in the church while he was absent from the church.
Okay.
Because I guess, I don't know if they rented to people or if people lived there that like supported the church, you know, like janitors or people that clean the organs or oil the pews or whatever. People live, I don't know.
People live there, yes.
People live there. So a few days after the Reverend returned, Henrietta told Mrs. H.H. Peterson that she was going to visit a friend named Mrs. Hansen on Center Street and that she would be back in the evening for church services. Okay.
Okay.
So the next day.
So she's going to be back, basically.
But then after that, so she's going to go just across town, go hang out with her friend, Mrs. Hansen, and then she'd be back for church services. And then the following day, she was going to leave the country to go visit a female friend. So this is her, like, legitimately, this is what Henrietta's going to do, right?
This is what she's saying. This right. is her plan.
This is Henrietta's plan. So the last person who was known to see Henrietta was that Mrs. H.H. Peterson, who she told that she was going to go see her friend across town, and then she was going to leave the country, right?
Right.
Because Henrietta kept in constant contact with her friends, like locally as well as in Omaha, right? She wrote letters all the time. She kept in contact with the people that she was close to.
She's keeping in touch with everybody.
Right. So they didn't hear from her, and it was highly unusual. They were like, they started being like, what the heck is going on? So her friends started contacting the church and even the Reverend directly to find out where Henrietta could be. And her friends were shocked to hear back from the Reverend directly, who claimed that he had seen Henrietta in a brothel in Butte, Montana. So what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck on many levels? Because
why is he in a brothel?
That's the first what the fuck. And then the second is, why are you going to throw her into a brothel? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we already know she's a victim.
We already know he killed her.
Right. So
this man is crazy. Yeah, he's wilding out over here for the 1800s. Early, is it early 1900s at this point?
No, it's 1895.
We're still, okay.
Yeah, it's 1895. And you know
what?
We're
still before the turn of the century.
To be honest, I think this kind of stuff, not this maybe necessarily, But shit was bad always. Like, people say, like, now there's all these serial killers and now there's this and now there's that.
No, what there is now
is social media.
It wasn't recorded.
And worldwide news. And, like, we get the information a lot quicker than we got it back in the day. Because this, they didn't get this information, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they also, like, weren't recording all of these things.
No. So,
or they semi-were. Like, this guy who obviously had made a name for himself doing these things.
Right.
Even though I've never heard of him before. But he made a name. I mean, there's so many serial killers out there. How could you have heard of them all?
Right.
I'm not a serial killerologist. Nice. Self-proclaimed title, serial killerologist. I don't know why I keep singing today.
That's okay. Oh, don't make me do it, though. That's not cool.
It's not fine. Cool.
So anyway, a brothel in Butte, Montana. Like, okay. Yeah. Sure. Cool, dude.
Like, whatever. I said, he's wild and out.
Yeah. Well, and you know, he's writing letters, right, to her friends saying this. Because obviously there's no, like, he's not emailing or going on Instagram.
Or calling.
Right.
Although they had telegrams at this point,
I yeah. think. But
still.
Yeah, he's writing her friends back and saying, because they're writing to him. Like, they're writing the church, like, just in general, writing the church, and then specifically writing to him. Because if you recall, she wrote to her friends and said that she had this great friendship with the Reverend, right? So right. her friends know of the Reverend.
They know who he is.
Right.
Or not who he is, but they know that there's a Reverend in her life.
Right.
Unless she said the name.
Did well, she? I'm sure she did, because she's, like, enamored of him, right? She's great friends with him. She loves him. Well, I don't know that she loves him, but she's taking care of his apartments while he's away. Like, she's becoming entwined in his life.
Right.
So I'm sure, like, if you're talking about someone like that, you're not going to be like, oh, yeah, this Reverend. You're going to be like, the Reverend Francis Herman, blah, yes. blah, blah, or Reverend Herman or whatever. Like, you're going to be specific.
Yeah.
So
no, that makes sense.
They were writing the church. They were writing him directly. And this is his response back. It's like, okay, douchebag.
Yeah.
And again, why is a reverend in a fucking brothel? Nobody thought, like, well, that's weird.
Maybe you don't question your reverend.
Well, maybe he was going to save the brothelites.
He's going to go pray for their souls.
Yeah, something like that.
And pray for the gentlemen in their souls as well.
It wasn't elaborated on why or what the reason was.
I'm just speculating that he's in there to pray for everybody. He's not doing the hanky-panky. People, he's a reverend. Get your mind out of the gutter.
Yeah, clearly a good, solid guy. So people locally also began to inquire where Henrietta could be. Because, again, she was going to go out of the country. But nobody ever heard from her. And then that lady that she was going to go visit on Center Street, she never made it over there either.
Okay.
So she's just gone, right?
Vanished into thin air.
The church's janitor, Mr. Johnson, remembered the day after Henrietta went missing that the Reverend asked him to clear the pipes of the basement furnace and prepare it for a fire. And this was strange because the furnace hadn't been used in years because it had caused a big fire before.
Nice.
Right. So he's like, hey, can you just clean out those pipes? Because, like, I think we're going to give this another go.
But he hasn't been there for years. He didn't know that.
Well, he probably did. He probably knew the history of the church. And Mr. Johnson probably was like, hey, dude, I don't know if you know. I don't know if
that's the best idea, sir.
Right. So.
But who are you to question your reverend?
Exactly. So the reverend's his boss. So Mr. Johnson does as he's told. And when he's about to start the fire after he gets everything all prepared and cleaned up and ready to rock and roll, right? The Reverend stops him and he's like, oh no, I just want you to clean it out. Like, but I'm going to get the fire going. I'm going to attend to the matter myself. I just want to handle this on my own, right? So later that night, Ed Johnson, who must be a different person than Mr. Johnson, because just later, it's just the way it plays out in the story that I think it's two different guys, because this Mr. Johnson sounds like he's maybe an older guy, right? And so later that night, Ed Johnson, who again, I'm saying it must be a different person. In my notes, I wrote it must be a different person because he's not Mr. Johnson. And it says that he was a young worker who lived in a room upstairs in the church. So he said that he was overcome by intense heat and a putrid stench coming from the furnace. So much so that he passed out and was found by his parents. So that's why I think it's a different Mr. Johnson. I don't think they're one and the same.
Okay.
I think Johnson's just kind of a common name.
Yeah, probably.
Right?
Well, still. Well, I mean, I know it's a common name, but I'm just saying, yeah, probably. I agree. Probably two different people. Did he smell like burning hair? Because I feel like that's a pretty red flag.
It just said he was quoted as saying that he was overcome by intense heat and a putrid stench coming from the furnace. And he passed out and he was found by his parents, who had to splash him with water to wake him up. And they complained to the Reverend about the fire. But despite the concerns, the Reverend kept the fire going until 6 p.m. the next. So he starts at that one night, right, when everybody's sleeping. And then keeps it going until 6 p.m. the following day. And then he puts it out.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. We got to get that fire hot, right?
Yep. I'm thinking bad things are happening in that furnace.
You think?
I think it's not a kind furnace.
No. 2 weeks later, Herman left suddenly, claiming he had to go to another religious conference on the East Coast. And so he reached out to a friend in Provo, Utah, to give services in the church while he was gone. And the young man was also a friend of Henrietta's, the guy that he asked to come from Provo to give services. And so while Herman's gone, right, on the East Coast, he has this young reverend come to give services at his church. And he's also a friend of Henrietta's, right? Because just, you know.
She's trying to build a community. She's
trying to build a community, have bonds, like have her own, you know, extended family or whatever you want to call it. People she can rely on.
Right.
So this reverend that came to the church to perform services while Reverend Herman was gone decided that he was going to check the church's basement. And he was inspecting around the furnace, and he found under the grate of the furnace in the ash receiver two razors and an English-made butcher knife, which Herman was known to have kept in his kitchen, a garter buckle, a belt buckle, and the most shocking discovery,
teeth,
human bones. So upon further inspection, he noticed blood on the furnace door, and the belt buckle he also recognized as being Henrietta's because he was friends with Henrietta.
I'm confused. How would you recognize blood on the furnace door? Wouldn't it get so hot that it probably would like disintegrate?
Well, probably it was probably on the outside because it just said that he noticed it.
It would get so hot.
Well, maybe it's like splashed blood or something and it's turned brown and it's just, you know.
I feel like if it's hot enough, you probably wouldn't recognize that it was blood.
I don't know. I'm just going with what the story says.
I know. I was just wondering. It was just confusing to me.
Well, no, it makes sense because, you know, even our fireplace door, we have like that stove insert in our fireplace to help heat our house, keep the cost of electricity down because it's so stinking expensive.
Right.
Yeah. And even that handle gets hot, but I've never splashed it with blood to do a test.
I think we should do a test and report back.
Oh, right.
Who's the bleeding person?
No, you go ahead. It's all you.
Who's bleeding for
conduct
this one?
Conduct your experiments. I won't say anything except for to record your results and report back.
Yes, yes. You have to be the observer.
The authorities were called and an investigation was launched and the bones were sent for examination. The investigators also discovered a large charcoal sack and two artificial teeth with rivets, which were also found in the ashes. And Henrietta coincidentally had six artificial teeth.
Oh.
Yep. Mrs. Peterson. So that's the one, remember, that Henrietta told that she was going to go visit that other lady on Center Street and then leave the country the next day.
Yes.
So Mrs. Peterson, who knew both Herman and Henrietta, said that she had seen the Reverend carrying a large sack down to the basement, but of course she didn't ask any questions or know what it had in it. And she also said that Herman told her that Henrietta had proposed marriage to him, and not sure what that's about, whether it was true or not. Maybe it's ego, maybe it's who knows.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's a serial marrier slash killer.
Right. He's a Black Widow male version.
Right. So, which I don't know what he's getting out of marrying women and killing them, other than maybe he just wants to marry them. And then he's like, meh, you're not really doing it for me. And now you've had a kid, so
you're dead.
Right. It's just not doing it for me.
I just had a thought. I'm sorry. This just like went into my brain. How do they know that? Okay. So let me process through my train of thought. You said that she had six artificial teeth.
Mm-hmm.
In what time period was it? Because I know that teeth used to be like before, like they would make teeth out of wood or whatever.
Yeah, that was like porcelain. George Washington time.
or before porcelain too, mm-hmm. whatever. At some point in history, like up until recent, I think porcelain's like pretty in the recent, like the last 100 or so years is when they started doing porcelain teeth. They were real human teeth that they would put.
Well, it says artificial teeth and rivets. So, I mean, I guess if you want to know the maybe history silver, of artificial teeth.
Maybe silver or gold. Probably not gold, because gold is really expensive.
And it would also melt. But silver would melt, too. So, I don't know. Maybe something for you to look into.
I was just curious. This is where my brain rabbit holed.
No, I thought that, too. Also, well, keep going, and then we'll rabbit hole in a different direction. No, sorry. No, because I just had
My brain just wouldn't leave that point alone. Well, like, what is going on? Because if it was wood, it would burn. If it was gold or silver, it would melt.
Hmm.
If it's real human teeth, how would they know the difference between her teeth and somebody else's teeth to know it's her?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they use bone. I don't know.
I mean, like you said, there was the belt buckle that they identified as being hers.
Right.
But I just have my questions.
Questions that'll probably, unless you research, will not be answered, at least in this story.
Noted.
Okay. So the teeth were proven to be the connection to Henrietta by a dentist, Dr. Kaiser. So shortly after the teeth were connected to Henrietta, right, a trunk belonging to Henrietta was found in a pawn shop. Herman had claimed that he had sent the trunk to Henrietta out of where she'd gone out of the country.
Okay.
But they find it in a pawn shop.
Right.
And in the trunk was clothing that was Henrietta's. And it turned out the trunk had been sold to the pawn shop by
Reverend Herman.
Ding, ding, ding. Winner, winner.
I feel like this case is just closing in on him.
Right. So on a side note,
I feel like this is going to be trouble for him.
On a side note, I think that this is not going to surprise you, at least the first part, that Herman was known to be a drinker.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't care about that.
Okay, well,
I guess he's frequenting brothels, so.
And killing people. So I feel like
I guess you kind of have to numb your feelings at some point.
Yeah, exactly. So, and also during this time, he was under investigation by his church for embezzling church funds.
Now, that one is a little bit shocking to me.
Really? He's a murderer, but not a thief?
No. I mean, like, the embezzlement part. Because, hear me out, if he has life insurance out on these ladies, then he probably is bringing in some coin from murdering them. Right?
I didn't read anywhere about the life insurance, but he's selling their stuff.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, why would he be embezzling?
Because I'm guessing he doesn't have any money.
Because he's just a criminal.
Right. And maybe that.
He's a well-rounded criminal.
Right.
He doesn't just, he's not like a one-trick pony. He does it all. Right. He goes hard.
Yeah. While delivering your Sunday sermon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all.
This guy,
exactly.
This quack.
So before he left to go to that religious conference on the East Coast or in the East, he was awaiting a verdict from the church regarding his future as reverend of the church. Because of the embezzling.
Okay.
And also, again, because he was known to drink. They were deliberating about whether they wanted a thieving, drunk reverend.
I'm sorry. I just feel like I have to say this now because it's a thought that's been happening in my brain for a hot minute now. That this is one of my least favorite kind of people are the people that hide behind their religion and then do horrible things. But they're like, oh, but I'm a Christian, so it's fine. You know, like, oh, but I'm Jewish, so it's cool.
Yeah.
Like, that shit pisses me off.
Yeah,
like,
don't disagree.
Like, having a religion is not exclusive to making you a good person. You know, like, just because you subscribe to some kind of faith of any sort doesn't make you a good person. Being a good person makes you a good person. You can be whatever and still be a piece of shit.
Right.
You know, like this is pissing me off. I don't like this guy. I think he's a big old dick.
Yeah, he's not a good person.
Yeah, he's a big old dick muncher. Isn't that what we said last time? Dick muncher?
I think that was
in the worst kind of way.
Not in a good way.
No, in a bad way. He's a dick muncher. Bad kind of way.
Bad
kind of dick muncher. Like the kind that, like, you're expecting something nice to happen to your dick and then somebody just chomps down on it.
Oh my gosh.
That is the bad kind of dick muncher.
Sometimes when you say things, it's wildly uncomfortable being that I'm your mother.
Just throwing that out there.
I don't apologize for that one.
I'm sure you don't.
Unapologetically myself.
Yeah, just be yourself, Daph. Just so that you're aware, it makes me wildly uncomfortable sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe my kid just said that.
Out loud.
Yeah, and out loud. Well, if I heard it, you said it. Out loud. Because I definitely can't read the word. Well, I was going to say I can't read the word bubbles over your head, but sometimes I can. Not long after Henrietta's incinerated remains were found, Herman was implicated in another disappearance. A woman named Annie K. Samuelson.
Okay, how many does that put him at? That's six with Henrietta. Yeah?
Right?
Because he had three wives, two kids. Henrietta.
Take two.
Us being in sync all the time.
Right? My body double. I'm the stunt woman.
Are you or am I the stunt woman? Because I'm the little version of you.
No. I think I'm the stunt woman.
I'm leading the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm the main character.
Yeah, I'm not even going to comment on that.
I'm funny. Come on. I'm definitely the main character.
Okay.
In my own life.
So we are at six. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. She is number six.
Number six. After.
Wait, this is number seven.
Yeah. We're getting on to number seven. So a woman named Annie K. Samuelson was missing and presumed dead. Annie was a member of Herman's church.
Okay, I was about to ask, what's the connection? Or did he meet her in a brothel?
So she was a member of his church prior. Okay, so she was not prior, but anyway, so she was a member of his church. She was a governess to a prominent family, and a governess is like a nanny, right?
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yes. So a governess is like a nanny.
An au pair?
Well, maybe. I don't know. If she came from another country to live with them, then yes. But I don't have that information.
She's a nanny.
She's a nanny. She's a governess.
But you're to be a governess, that means you're doing it for a wealthy family.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
So, well, and back then, I think regular people just didn't have nannies. You had to have some money to have a
nanny.
A governess.
Okay.
So anyway, she had ties to the Salt Lake community. She had an aunt and other family members that lived in Salt Lake City. Annie left her job as a governess and went to work as Herman's housekeeper. Herman also promised to marry her. I feel like that's a big red flag right there.
If he wants to marry you, you're going to be dead.
Right? It's like, okay, you're dead. On February 28th, 1896, Annie told her family and friends that she was going to go to Ogden to marry Herman the following day. So Herman, however, was in Salt Lake City the day they were supposed to wed in Ogden, right?
Right.
So when people asked him about Annie's whereabouts, Reverend Herman said she was in Ogden and he didn't know when she planned on returning. And guess what? She never did.
Of course she didn't.
Right. So a few days after learning that Herman had killed Henrietta, a gold ring and watch belonging to Annie were found in a pawnbroker's shop.
Oh.
Right?
Because this is what I was also happening in my brain. What was also happening in my brain was that I was thinking that, like, this is also the time period where, you know, people might go out on the road and something would happen to them. Like she said, she was traveling to Ogden to marry him, but something could happen on the road and you're just not hearing from her again because nobody knows what happened because she's out on the road and there's no cell phones or anything of that nature.
Right.
And I assume it's probably not developed like it is today. You're in horse-drawn carriages or riding your horses or whatever, traveling by foot even.
Or train.
Right, where there's just not a ton of records.
Right.
And that maybe, but I guess you said that the rings were found, or her ring was found in the pawn shop.
Mm-hmm. Her ring and a gold watch, or a gold ring and a watch.
This man, let me tell you, he frustrates me.
Yeah, he's not a good guy.
I feel like I am more frustrated with him than some of the others because it's like, oh, they're just a piece of shit. Oh, you're supposed to be a good person, apparently. By laws of society, you're meant to be a good person. What the fuck are you doing, sir? Sir Herman? Reverend Herman?
Reverend Francis Herman?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Being a piece of shit.
Yeah. Slain, motherfucker.
Slame?
Slain.
Oh. I was like, what's slame?
You slame fucker.
That's super lame.
Yeah, that's super lame. So you're just slame. You're a slame person.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Francis Herman.
Mr. Reverend. Reverend Mister?
Reverend Mister? What?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know. I don't know.
I just work here.
Same. All right. So again, her stuff, Annie's stuff. So Remember Henrietta's stuff was found in a pawn shop.
The trunk.
The trunk with her clothes. And now Annie's stuff was found in a pawn pawn shop. And they were sold by Herman a few days before he left for Kansas City. Because he says now that he's going to go to Kansas City. Okay. And then further investigation uncovered that Herman and Annie were, in quotes, criminally intimate. Criminally intimate.
Does that mean like sex before marriage?
Because they were living together without being married, and Annie had become pregnant, and Herman had performed an abortion on her in January.
He ain't a doctor.
Nope. So remember, this is February, right? She goes missing. So yes. It's a month later. Of course, since Annie was never found, it's not clear how she was killed. But when police searched Herman's room after his departure to Kansas City, they found a box of poisonous drugs. And I don't know what they were, just as poisonous drugs.
I was just about to ask you, do we know how he killed these people? I was just going to ask you that.
Well, the first three or the first five are mysterious circumstances.
Right. So that could have been poisoned because it's not, if they would have been stabbed, like, I feel like that would have been clear.
Right. That wouldn't be so mysterious.
Or strangled if there would have been bruising around their necks.
Right. Mysterious. So the police found a box of poisonous drugs, and it was also known that Herman had a heavy interest in human anatomy and dissection. So, you know, he's obviously able to perform an abortion.
Interest means doctor.
Right. Interest. Yeah. Hey, I got this. Come over here because we're criminally intimate. So
that's so weird.
I know, right?
Saying that.
Yeah.
Instead of saying they're like
living in sin.
Hooking up.
Nope. Apparently it was a crime. Apparently it was a crime. Maybe because he's a reverend. I don't know. But
I feel like it's not an actual crime that he would be prosecuted for.
I don't know. It says criminally intimate.
Well, I guess look at today's day and age. But anyway. Nothing about today in the South.
Nope.
We're not getting there. We're not talking about that.
Okay. So, all right. Looping back in. It was presumed that Annie had been drugged with a lethal dose of the poisonous drugs found in Herman's room. And then he dismembered her body in the basement of the church before disposing of her remains. Authorities uncovered the information that Herman had a large box made for him at a nearby lumber yard a few days before Annie disappeared. And they theorized that he had butchered and dismembered her body, put it in the box, and had the box shipped to Kansas City so he could dispose of her when he arrived there.
Okay. Well, I guess that makes sense why his big knife that was known to be in his home was in the basement.
Yeah, in the fireplace.
Yeah.
So except for that was found with Henrietta. So
he could still try. He could have not moved it again.
Or he got a different knife. Well, because the police kept that one.
No. But this was before Henrietta, right? No. This was after Henrietta?
Oh, no, you're right. It was before because it says shortly after Henrietta, then he was implicated.
Yeah.
So you're right. Sorry.
No, well, I was just thinking about the fact that you said he disposed of her in the basement or hacked her up in the basement, not disposed of her.
Yeah, that's a theory. It's a theory.
So the knife was down there and then he could have also proceeded to chop up Henrietta before he stuck her in the furnace.
Right.
But then why wouldn't he just stick Annie in the furnace, too?
Because he didn't have it ready to roll. Because remember, he had to have Mr. Johnson get it ready to roll.
Right. But I mean, he could have had it get ready to roll before that.
Well, it was maybe an afterthought because he's down there dissecting Annie.
And he's like, furnace here.
He's like, oh, crap. I should incinerate her, but I can't because the pipes aren't clean because of the fire.
Okay.
So he's like, if I'm going to do this again, maybe I should probably be prepared. So I'll have Mr. Johnson come and clean the pipes so that if and when, just in case, on the offhanded chance that perhaps I should do it again, I have a place to just go ahead and incinerate remains.
What a douchebag.
Hey, he's planning ahead.
So the police searched the grounds, the church grounds, and found a number of bones, some of which were human, and none of them were positively identified as Annie's, which is really cool to me that they could back then identify bones belonging to people, like forensics, you know. How far it's come now, but the level of stuff they could do in the 1800s.
I was going to ask, how would they know or not know?
Specifically, I don't know, but if they can ID Henrietta's teeth and they can definitively say that these are not Annie's bones, then they've got to have some way of knowing that, you know?
Okay.
Maybe based on size, like measurements or something, like she was only this tall and we found like this humerus. And so there's no way a person that tall could have this big of a humerus or that small of a humerus or something.
Okay, that would make sense.
I'm just throwing it out
there. Measurements would make more sense.
Right. In any case, Herman for sure had murdered her based on the fact that two different letters, one from a Reverend Elphison and presiding church elder Mork, stated that Herman, so two different people, right, wrote letters to the authorities saying that Herman tried to sell clothing that belonged, and he said it belonged to his deceased wife. And then, so he's not selling the clothing, but he's like trying to sell it to parishioners or whatever. He went to Elphison's house and gave his wife some of the clothes. And upon further inspection, the initials AKS were found in the clothing. So Annie K. Samuelson.
Okay.
So her initials are found in these clothes, right? So right. Elder Mork had the same exact story. That the Reverend Herman went to his house, gave his wife some clothing, and she also found Annie's initials in the clothing that Herman had given her.
It's not looking too good for you, Herman.
It is not. So also, another reverend from Butte, Montana, sent a letter to the police stating that Herman had sold a trunk with a quantity of ladies' clothing inside while he was in Montana.
Not looking good for this guy. That's what I was humming. Is that like... Seems like fingers are pointing at you, Herman.
Right. And he's in Butte, Montana, right? Selling stuff where he supposedly sees
Henrietta
in the brothel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
This guy.
Exactly. So we're going to go back victim tally in order. But wait, that's not all.
Oh.
Okay. So his first wife, Emmeline Smith, was killed in England. You know, I don't have any information about that other than that she died under suspicious circumstances in 1889.
Okay.
Right? Okay. Then the second victim is his wife, Bertha, and their child in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And again, she was about to be shipped off to an insane asylum and mysteriously died along with their child She's getting ready to roll out.
Right.
Okay. Now, this came after the fact. Because now police are looking for Herman, right? So, believed to likely be his actual third victim was a woman named Carolyn Crowley. This was also in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Herman had tried and failed to marry her, and then she just, poof, disappeared in the spring of 1892. And her sister, Clara, thought it was most likely Herman had killed her.
How does she know that? Because he had just tried to marry her?
Mm-hmm. Because he was like wooing her and trying to like...
He was trying to court her.
Right. And then all of a sudden, she's gone.
This motherfucker.
Right. So she's the actual third victim.
Okay.
So it's because he's still in Minneapolis, Minnesota when this happens.
The next wife and the next baby.
Right. And this woman, Clara, came forward after the other things happened, because by this time stuff's in the paper, right? Because he's traveled to Kansas City and they're like, whoa, he's, you know, the press is like, well, he's killed this woman and he's killed this woman and, you know, yada, yada. So then this lady comes forward and she's like, I always thought that he killed my sister. Because he was trying to marry her and then she's disappeared. Like, we've never found her. Never found her body, never, like...
Right, they have no signs that point to anywhere of her.
Right, she's just gone. And she's not the kind of person that's just going to be gone, apparently.
Okay.
You know? So then the fourth victim, technically fourth victim and fifth, is the Mrs. Lowen, Miss Lowen. And they never gave her first name, so I apologize for that. And I looked in a couple different places and just never found it. So, and their child in Salt Lake City in 1893, who again, the pair, died
under mysterious or suspicious circumstances. And then you have Henrietta Clausen in 1895 in Salt Lake City and Annie K. Samuelson also. And Annie actually should be before Henrietta.
I was just going to ask. You shouldn't.
So, my bad. Yes.
No, that's okay.
So Annie.
I was just trying to piece together these timelines in my brain.
So Annie is also in 1895 in Salt Lake City. And Henrietta is in 1895, and maybe she's 1896 based on the timeline of Annie Samuelson, but I'm just going off of the information that I have.
Well, and perhaps they didn't find her until February.
Well,
or find anything in the basement until February, and to find Henry.
Or he has
body.
A short timeline, right? Because presumably he kills Annie in February because he performs an abortion on her in January, and then she's gone poof in February. And then Henrietta is in the fall.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, she's in the fall. So after Henrietta and Annie's disappearances, aka murders, Herman left Salt Lake City because they're not found. So technically, you know,
he's not on the hook for anything.
Well, he's on the hook, but they're not.
They don't have any information.
They can't say that they've been murdered. You know, they can't prosecute him.
There's no evidence.
Well, they can, but. You know, as far as they know, they're just they've disappeared. They have evidence that Annie's probably or that Henrietta's probably been incinerated. But Annie, they just don't know. They just have the speculation. Right. So Herman left Salt Lake City and said he was going to Kansas City, Missouri, then on a religious tour to Decorah, Iowa. I think Decorah. And by this time, the authorities are looking for Herman. And guess what? Surprise, surprise. He wasn't found in either Kansas City or in Decorah, Iowa. Either place that he said he was going, they couldn't track him down. So money was offered to anyone who could provide information to find Herman so that he could be arrested. So he was also traced to St. Louis and said to be hiding out after that, possibly in Cincinnati or perhaps in a small town near Indianapolis. And he was believed to be working as a florist. Because obviously he's not going to go
work. That's a career shift.
Right. But obviously he's not going to go back and work in the church because that's like too obvious, right?
Right.
But yeah, I don't know why florist. But hey, I guess you want to smell the roses for once? I don't know.
Right. I was thinking that he might go work in like an unwed women's home, like volunteer. That'd be easy to prey
unwed
on people.
Women's? Like an unwed mother's?
Yeah, like an unwed mother's. Sorry.
That's okay.
Because I know they used to, I mean, I'm sure they still have them. But I know they definitely seem more prominent than they are today.
Right.
And I was thinking that'd be easy for him. Right. That's like, I'm trying to think of like an example of that. And fishing is what comes to my brain. Is like, that'd be like, instead of him fishing in the ocean, like it's greater water.
Shooting fish in a barrel? Is that what you're looking for?
Like, yeah, like catching a fish out of like a smaller, like a densely populated area of fish in a smaller body of water.
A stocked pond?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeez. Words don't work in Daphne's brain.
That was a very long road.
It was an extremely long road, but right. We got to where we needed to with your help.
And I'm thinking maybe he should be a butcher instead of a florist. Just seems like a closer.
Yeah, but not if he's not really butchering people. I mean, okay, anyway.
Yeah, well, he's dismembering and dissecting.
Yeah, that's true. Performing abortions. Maybe he should have gone to be a doctor. He probably could have forged his medical license.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he was pretty handy at doing a lot of things. So because
like we said, well-rounded criminal.
Right. So because money was being offered to find this guy, tips were coming in huge volumes. And over the following year, several people were arrested, but none of them turned out to be Herman. So among those arrested were a man named D.M. Elmenberg. On June 1st of 1896, a man named George Nolan swore up and down he had traveled with Herman and said he was hiding out in Idaho. Nolan accompanied police officers to St. Anthony, Idaho, and found a man with a strong resemblance to Herman. It was later determined not to be Herman, and the man was identified as D.M. Elmenberg, a San Francisco native. However, Nolan was insistent that it was Herman because he wanted the $500 reward. So they're offering $500. It's 1896. That's a lot of freaking money. So people are like, oh, this is him. This is him.
Money?
I did not. Would you like to pause it and do it?
I would love to.
Okay. So $500 in 1896 is worth $17,807.74 today.
Do you see why I like the conversion rate?
I do like the conversion.
Because it's interesting.
Yes, it is.
I'm like, that's a lot of, I mean, that's a lot of money back then, but that's a lot of money today.
It is a lot of money. Just
and that's a lot of just for even a tip.
Right. Exactly. For a tip that leads to an arrest. So on June 5th, 1896, Reverend J. Orris Brown was arrested in Tennessee. He was also believed to be Herman, and he was first detained in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Then he was extradited to Cleveland, which I'm not really sure why they sent him to Cleveland. But that was while they were waiting for a picture of Herman for a positive ID. And after they got the photo, it was determined that he was not Herman, and so he was released.
Well, duh, because he has a different name. Of course he's not Herman.
So the next is Reverend G. Wynn Richmond, who had already been arrested and was being held in Topeka, Kansas, where he was awaiting trial for sending obscene material through the mail. He was thought to potentially be Herman, which Richmond denied. He denied vehemently that he was Herman, and it was proven that he was not.
Okay.
Okay. So then in July of 1897, another man who was unnamed was also arrested in Pembroke, Ontario, Canada, on suspicion of being Herman. A detective from Salt Lake City went up to Ontario to confirm his identity, but he also wasn't Herman, and of course, he was released.
Jeez, they're just going through it, trying to find him.
They are.
They're just like, hey, you have brown hair and brown eyes. Is that you?
Is it you? Could it be? You're a reverend.
Right.
Right. So after...
You were married 3 times. Is it you?
Is it? So after 1897, there were no more sightings of Herman. So who knows if he just laid low or stopped his murderous ways or didn't.
Shaved his head.
Maybe karma caught up with him and he ended up being dismembered and incinerated.
Huh.
I don't know. It's a mystery. So he never was caught.
He was never prosecuted for anything.
He was never caught. He was never prosecuted. He dipped out.
Okay. Is that the end of it?
The end.
I didn't like it. This guy pisses me off. I mean, it was a good story that I've never heard before. Where did you find it?
You know, rabbit hole.
Well, how did you hear about it? Like, what did you look up to find it? Reverend or what?
No, I was just looking at criminals who were never caught.
Okay.
And I never heard of him. So I started reading about it. And I
thought,
like,
you hated unsolved. Oh, yes, it's...
It's not unsolved.
It's semi-solved.
It's just unprosecuted.
Semi-solved.
Yeah. So I just, because, you know, there's a lot of them that have gotten away that, you know, you've heard the story, but right. I never heard this one before. And then you read Francis Herman, a.k.a. the Priestly Butcher, kind of grabs your attention.
But it should say the Reverend Butcher.
I know. I don't get it. I don't know why they call him the Priestly Butcher, because he's not a priest, and a reverend and a priest are not the same thing.
Yeah, no, they're not.
So, but I don't know. Whoever gave him that nickname was just wrong.
No, I dig the story in itself. Well, kind of. I guess it's big. Yo, I like that a lot. No, it was a great story, but... Man, I hate motherfuckers who, like, can't just be like, yo, I'm a bad person.
Right.
It's like they have to hide behind something to be, like, holier than thou. And he's not. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, he was a super bad dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a murderer. He was a child murderer, infanticide. He was a thief. He was a boozer. Well, he was a liar.
Yeah, and it's not like...
He performed an abortion without having a medical license.
I feel like what I'm going to say is not going to come out right any way I shake it. So bear with me. That I don't know if it's worse that you're, like, murdering people that, like, trust you and have kind of a relationship with you. I mean, obviously, like, he was married to 3 of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was courting several of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was courting the ones he wasn't married to, and obviously the children were his.
Right.
So I don't know if it's worse that you kill people that you have a relationship with to some degree or complete strangers, because it's like these people have trust in you. Like, a complete stranger is not going to have trust in you.
No, I feel like murdering strangers is...
I mean, it's all bad.
Yeah.
But, like...
I was going to say it's less bad, but I don't think that it's less bad. I just think it's less personal, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. But this motherfucker, he pisses me off.
I don't like him.
I don't like him either. I think... That even though, like, he's a reverend, I'm gonna go to heaven. No, he's deep in the pits of hell.
Right.
Like, constantly being hacked up and incinerated.
Hopefully.
Like, how people have hell loops that they say, that there's, like, hell loops. Yeah, he's
his, is that like Fruit Loops?
Yeah, it is. There are eight people standing over him with knives. Eight, right? That's the final number is eight.
So there's 1, 2, 3 wives, 2 children, Henrietta, Annie, and then that Caroline.
Yeah.
So 8, yes.
Yeah, 8 people. 8 people standing over him with butcher knives, chopping him up, throwing him in an incinerator, having all the ashes fall through. Then he's being reformed and it's happening again and again and again. But not like a phoenix rising from his own ashes, because he ain't cool like a phoenix.
No. Well, then I wonder again, like, did he stop? Because who just stops? They don't just stop.
Right. Like we talked about last week with the Honolulu Strangler. Like maybe he switched up his MO.
Right.
Or they never found the people. So there was nothing to like really go off of.
Maybe he went to another country and just did the same thing. And they just, and he changed his name, went to a different country. And there was no relevance to the United States. So who knows?
Yeah, who fucking knows?
But I hate the who knows part.
I do too.
I just hope that the karma part is being lived out.
Yeah, that he's burning in the pits of hell. But not just like, oh, how they say you're burning. Like, no, he's like actually being incinerated on repeat.
Right, but not drugged. He's fully coherent.
Yeah, he's fully coherent, feeling every single time that a piece of his body is chipped away at.
Right.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.